people are our most important asset. You know, businesses wouldn't exist without the people within them. And so it just should be fundamental. I think it should be just a necessity for every workplace to be investing in the well-being of their people. What's really interesting is that the science is now coming out to back up these ancient practices and the impact that it has on our body. So my belief on AI is that I think it's all about how you use it, right? And my view on AI is that if we can use it to augment human expertise, we will go a long way towards being able to make better discoveries, better predictions, you know, have a huge impact on our lives.
From the first-time founders to the funds that back them, innovation needs different. Our episode partner, HSBC Innovation Banking, is proud to accelerate growth for tech and life science businesses, creating meaningful connections and opening up a world of opportunity for entrepreneurs and investors alike. Discover more at www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Hello and welcome to the UKTM podcast, a weekly chat with the movers and shakers of the UK tech industry and the destination for all things UK tech related. I'm your host, Jane Wakefield, and joining me this week is Reva Misra, the founder and CEO of Walking on Earth, a health platform focused on helping alleviate stress. Welcome, Reva.
Thank you, Jane. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, let's first of all get a little kind of explanation from you about how Walking on Earth works.
Yes, we call ourselves One for short. And in a nutshell, we have developed a technology that can measure and regulate stress levels. And how that works is we've developed a three-step process that we call the One method to measure and regulate stress. The first step is our One Index, which is our proprietary stress score. And that's something we spent the last about 3 years building with leading stress scientists from universities such as Stanford and UCLA, combined with our own internal team of machine learning researchers, product developers, designers, and full stack engineers. And that score is scientifically approved as a measure of stress. And it combines a clinical assessment with biometric data. So we combine qualitative inputs with physiological inputs like heart rate variability, sleep, activity, and so on. And so once you have your score, which is the first step of the method, the second step is then receiving personalized interventions based on your score. And for that, we've developed an AI engine that recommends targeted interventions, taking in a whole host of data, such as your index score, but also engagement data, so that we can understand not just an individual's needs, but also their preferences and their lifestyle. And we integrate with existing work systems like your work calendar, your email, single sign-on, so that all the interventions are placed where you need it and when you need it. So when we recommend you these sessions, you get calendar invites in your diary, blocked out at times when we can see that you're free. So it's all about maximizing ease of access and reducing kind of those blockers in your day. And then the third and final step of our One method is our actual interventions. And those are what we call short micro moments of recovery. So bite-sized pieces of content that you can do to down-regulate your nervous system and move into a period of recovery during your working day. And those sessions are delivered by our network of experts. So we have a network of about 100 experts around the globe in various forms of interventions to reduce your stress, like different breathing exercises, movement exercises, like stretches and yoga, nutrition, coaching, and then scientists who cover various topics around sleep and stress and energy.
It feels a bit like it's actually a full-time job keeping yourself on an even keel because, you know, work overload, I should imagine, is still one of the big factors that kind of contributes to stress. If you're asking people to do a bunch of exercises and input data and, you know, take time out, isn't that in some ways just sort of adding to their stress load?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, so a typical definition of stress is when the demands in your environment outweigh your resources or your ability to cope with them. And so absolutely, if you do have too many demands in your environment, then that will add to your stress. But the way we developed our platform is to reduce all those barriers. And so, you know, whilst the problem of stress can seem large and complex, and most of the individuals that we interview say time is the biggest reason for them not prioritizing their health, to your point. And so what we've really done through our platform is make it as easy as possible to engage and reduce any barriers. And so that's why the actual interventions are only about 5 to 10 minutes long. And so we say you don't need hours of your day, or you don't even need to kind of go to a studio or go to a gym to de-stress. You can do it just sitting at your desk in between a meeting. And what I find really, really fascinating is that science has shown that 5 minutes is all you need to move from a heightened stress state, so the sympathetic nervous system, which is when your body's in that fight or flight stress state, down into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is that kind of calm state. So all you need is those 5 minute really short breaks in your day. And so that's what I say to someone who says, oh, I don't have time to look after my health, look after my stress. Say, you must have 5 minutes in your day. Everyone has 5 minutes to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm. It feels as if, you know, this problem, mental health problems in general, became far more of a problem during COVID and after COVID. Is that what you're finding too? And you know, are businesses equipped to deal with this in their workforces?
So it definitely has become a much larger problem since the pandemic, but that doesn't mean the problem didn't exist pre-pandemic. So the problem was already really large pre-pandemic, and I started the company in February 2020, so literally a month before, or around the time the pandemic hit. And I started it pre-pandemic because I'd identified the issue of stress before the pandemic. So even pre-pandemic, right, we saw that I was working previously at an AI healthcare company called Benevolent AI. And there it was, we were working on addressing diseases and finding medicines to untreated diseases. But while I was there, I realized actually 70% of diseases are chronic. They don't have a cure. And if we could address them earlier, we could then detect symptoms before they become chronic and treat our health preventatively. And when digging into the research, I saw stress kept cropping up as a leading indicator of poor ill health, and eventually all the same health indicators that lead to chronic disease. So, you know, even pre-pandemic, this was a huge issue. 85% of individuals in the US and UK report experiencing regular workplace stress. And unfortunately, it has only risen since the pandemic. So it was in the UK, sick leave was the highest in over a decade last year, and stress was one of the largest contributors. So unfortunately, like, whilst, you know, we're seeing efficiencies in tech and science being applied to our workplace and a whole host of issues, it still shocks me that we're not focusing it on what I believe is the most important element, which is the health of our people, of our employees.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the things that has happened as a result of this sort of being highlighted is that businesses are much more aware that they need to have kind of well-being policies. So what does a good well-being policy look like from your point of view, given the sort of info that you've had and the data you're getting back from your particular service?
In my view, a good well-being policy needs to involve both the individual and the system, so and the whole workplace that it's operating in. And so I think there has to be something that it's not a one-size-fits-all. And so you need personalized programs for each individual and their needs. And that's where the AI becomes so fundamental, and the platform, because the platform means that everyone can have access. But if you just focus on the individual, then it's very easy to just say, oh, it's the employee's responsibility to look after their stress, and the employer or the workplace takes no responsibility for employee stress, which we know shouldn't be the case, because workplaces are unfortunately the number one cause of stress in working individuals' lives. And so I believe there also has to be systemic change at the employer, at the workplace level. And that requires things like manager training, coaching, leaders being, you know, demonstrating health and well-being and leading from the top. So I think it's really important that both those areas are tackled. Secondly, I think it's really fundamental that well-being is treated like other business priorities. And so for that, I think it's really important that we have a way to actually measure well-being, that we're data-driven in the approach. What I see from a lot of people's perceptions about well-being and speaking to HR leaders and business leaders is that because well-being is not measurable, it's not seen as business critical, and it's still seen as a nice to have versus a necessity. And so when budgets are tight, when we're going through an economic downturn, it's the first thing that gets cut. And so I think until well-being is seen and seen as metrics driven, and we're able to actually link it to business performance, it's just not going to get the attention it deserves and needs in an organization.
And you mentioned there, you know, that the businesses are kind of having to weigh up what they spend money on. And that's sort of especially the case for startups and scale-ups, which, you know, are, and that can be the most stressful of environments, right? Because you're trying to start something and, you know, you need everybody to sort of be switched on the whole time. So what would your advice be to companies like that who perhaps don't have the money for it, but probably need some kind of policy or some kind of actions taken, because they're the ones that are going to be, their employees are going to be in the under the most stress?
Yeah, I agree. I think it comes down to A, employees are under the most stress, but also people are our most important asset. You know, businesses wouldn't exist without the people within them. And so it just should be fundamental. I think it should be just, you know, a necessity for every workplace to be investing in the well-being of their people. We see employee engagement in terms of how engaged employees are at work. So it's at, you know, between 20 to 30%. And so if we can improve that by, you know, and well-being and stress is a big reason for low employee engagement. So if we are able to improve that, we'll see huge productivity gains and huge impact on business metrics too. And so I don't fully buy into the argument that when companies say we don't have the funds to invest in this, because say it's not just a basic fundamental human right to treat your employees well and make sure they're not stressed. It also has a direct impact on business performance. So I think everyone should have a small percentage of their budget for employee well-being, no matter their stage.
HSBC Innovation Banking, our partner for this episode, provides commercial banking services, expertise, and insights to the technology, life science and healthcare, private equity, and venture capital industries. To find out why innovation needs different, go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. You said earlier that, you know, it's a difficult thing to measure well-being, but that, you know, platforms like your own are starting to do that. So what are you seeing as being the kind of patterns? Because during COVID, obviously people were stressed about their jobs in terms of, you know, having to do them in a different way. They were also stressed about their health. What has been the sort of stresses, the main stresses that you're seeing people suffering from going back to work? Because sometimes it almost feels like it's the fact that people are wanting to go back to normal, and everyone's got used to a very different type of normal, for instance, working from home, not having to commute, all of those things that are perhaps adding to the stress. They didn't even realise that they were stresses beforehand, but having lived for a couple of years without those things, they're now finding them more stressful. Is that fair, or is that not what you're finding?
No, absolutely, 100% is. The working world has fundamentally changed since the pre-pandemic, and we're not going to go back to the state it was. And we're still figuring out what that new normal, as we call it, looks like. And that, I think most of all, the biggest cause of stress is actually the uncertainty and the ambiguity. And that's why stress during the pandemic was so high, because we were constantly faced with this ambiguity and uncertainty over the future. And if you look back at the last 4 years, we've had so many of these unprecedented, like, black swan events occur with the pandemic, but then also with all the economic and global turmoil the world has been under. And so we've just been faced with so many of these, like, unprecedented events that uncertainty and anxiety that's caused is having a huge toll on our mental health and on our stress levels. And I think that is leading to huge change in workplaces. Another big trend that we're seeing is the newer generations and how they're demanding different workplaces. And so, you know, what I find interesting is that Gen Z are going to be 30% of the workforce next year. And they are choosing health over salary when making career decisions. And so a lot of the CHROs and HR leaders that we work with come to us and they say, it's the first time we're actually having people ask about health benefits in interview processes. And a lot of our leaders and managers have never faced this before, and they just don't know how to respond. And so catering for this new generation that's demanding healthier work environments is also a big change.
So personally, during the pandemic, I think I was probably less stressed in many ways than I was during the sort of pre-pandemic, partly because the phone wasn't ringing all the time and I could just get on with my work. But one thing that I did find very helpful was doing yoga. And I know that you've spoken before in previous interviews about how you want to kind of combine your science background with your Indian heritage of holistic health practices. And I know that you know, yoga is important to you too. So how do you sort of match those two things? And, you know, how do you kind of get that across in a piece of tech?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we say is that it's we combine modern science with ancient wisdom, and it's a Venn diagram of where the two intersect is where we see the biggest benefit, and that's where we focus on. And so how that actually manifests through our product is that we are backed by AI technology, but we're led by our experts, and those experts are human, and they're all trained in a lot of these ancient practices. And so what I find fascinating is that actually these practices like yoga, like meditation, they've been practiced for thousands of years and they've persisted through society for their ability to help people manage stress, bring focus, bring clarity in our working lives and day-to-day lives. And they've actually been done by leaders in times of battle as a way to maintain that focus and clear decision-making and perform at their best in a time of crisis or in a time of high stress. And what I find interesting is actually, if you look at a lot of modern day leaders, they say the same thing. And so if you look at leaders like Oprah Winfrey, you know, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, they attribute no small part of their success to some of these contemplative, meditative practices. One example that I love using is that Steve Jobs asked at his memorial for a copy of the book Autobiography of a Yogi to be given to everyone as his last parting gift, because that's the book that's had the most profound impact on his life. And so, you know, there's a clear trend that a lot of these leaders do these practices and actually attribute their success to them. What's really interesting is that the science is now coming out to back up these ancient practices and the impact that it has on our body. And so, for example, brain imaging studies of monks have shown that monks who've been meditating for years have increased activity in their prefrontal cortex, which is the area of the brain associated with higher decision-making and reasoning. And they have lower activity in the amygdala, which is the area of the brain associated with fear and anger and those kind of emotions. So we're seeing, you know, countless other studies. And what's interesting is that through our platform, we're bringing the AI technology and science with these ancient practices so that individuals can see, you know, we say you can not just feel the benefits, but you can measure them too. And we're already starting to see data on that. So we've seen overall on our breathwork practices, so all the breathing practices on our app, we've been able to measure on average a 10% reduction in heart rate. And we've seen some really big jumps. So we've observed some people's heart rate go from, you know, 90 beats per minute down to 50 in just a 10-minute breathing practice. And so, you know, well, I think this is so fundamental because we're now actually able to show the science, and that will then bring in the validity and bring the attention to these practices that they deserve.
Interesting. And it is interesting how technology and sort of going back to ways of doing things that were much before technology even came along is now sort of being amalgamated. You talked about AI, which is obviously the most current of technologies. What role does the AI play, and what is the AI sort of system underlying it? Are you using OpenAI or one of the other large language models? What is the AI that's in your system?
Yeah, so my belief on AI is that I think it's all about how you use it, right? And my view on AI is that if we can use it to augment human expertise, we will go a long way towards being able to make better discoveries, better predictions, you know, have a huge impact on on our lives. And so the way that we use AI is being able to improve the predictions on our platform so that we can personalize the content and make them more relevant and targeted to the individual. So what happens on our platform is that we have our score that, as I mentioned, is generated based on qualitative and quantitative inputs. And then once you receive your score, we have an AI recommendation engine that recommends you targeted content and gives you personalized insights based on your score. And we also take in other data, like the engagement data on your app, on the app. So if you, for example, really liking our sleep content with a certain practitioner, we can then recommend that to you, or we can see what times of day you like to engage or the length of the session. You know, some people really like the short 1-2 minute piece of content. Other people like the longer content. And so the more you use the platform and the more you engage, the more we can actually learn about you and your preferences and therefore give you a more relevant and personalized experience.
You mentioned earlier that you've been involved in Benevolent AI, which seems to have been going through some turbulent times with layoffs of staff, exits from the US, leadership changes. I know you no longer are at that company, but what do you think is, you know, have you got any thoughts on what's going on there?
You know, I left about nearly 5 years ago now. So it's, it's a very different landscape to when I was there. So I don't know. I'm not up to date enough with the company.
In terms, though, of, you know, whether people are investing in med tech in their case, and in your case, I suppose it's a slightly different kind of offering. Do you find that VCs and investors are responsive to that, that they do find it an interesting area to invest in, or is it, do you have to kind of convince them that, you know, this is something that is worth them spending their money on?
So AI and healthcare are two huge industries that are growing. Biotech in general, like valuations have come down in this economic crisis, but if you have the AI field, then it's growing, and same with preventative health. What's interesting is that when we raised our first round in 2021, I still had investors come to me and say, oh, but, you know, isn't it good to be stressed? Or shouldn't we be a bit stressed at work? Like, that's how employees do their work properly. And it seemed like people were still not understanding the physiological impact and the health impact of stress at work. And now when I pitch, it's a totally different landscape. And I haven't had a single investor say to me, I don't think stress is a health issue. Everyone has unanimously said, this is a huge untapped need. We understand how stress is having a huge impact on our health. And there are huge tailwinds as to why now, with recent advances in wearables and AI that make it now possible to actually measure and treat our health preventatively. So yeah, I've seen a huge, huge shift in people's understanding of stress and proactive health.
That's interesting, actually, that they've taken a bit of a sort of a new view on it. So you mentioned that you raised some money in 2021, £3 million. Have you done more funding rounds since then? Where are you in your sort of funding journey, and what is it that you're looking to spend the money on?
Yeah, so we have. I can't disclose exactly how much yet. It's still a little bit premature, but hopefully soon. And we are now, so we're moving essentially from a phase of seed to growth. And so we now are at a place in the company where we have our AI stress coach working. We've launched it with clients across three main industries, tech, law, and finance. And we have some large logo clients across all those industries. We've also now seen the impact of working with those clients over the last few years. And so we have seen, in general, across three main areas. So our sales growth, engagement, and impact. Those are kind of our three main metrics. We've seen the model essentially working. So on the commercial side, we've seen 3x year-on-year growth, where in a tough climate, most of our competitors' growth has been stagnant or negative, and we've seen 100% of our pilots convert. And then on the engagement piece, we've seen our engagement rates are 8 times the industry standard of traditional wellbeing products and EAPs. And then I think what means the most to me is the impact. So we're not just able to show we're getting traction with large clients and we're engaging them, but we're also able to show that we're leading to an impact. And so what we've been able to show is that 70% of individuals using our platform actually report a reduction in stress. And we've also seen testimonials from individuals. So one person who's been using the app for nearly 3 years now has actually reported an improvement in their blood markers. They've seen their cholesterol go down and their blood markers improve, and they attribute that solely to using one. And so those kind of individual stories that really get me excited, because it shows that actually we can make a real difference, and we already are.
So what does the future hold?
Yeah, so when I think about the future, really, you know, our North Star metric, our goal is to reduce stress in 100 million people in the next few years. And in terms of how we actually get there, where, you know, we're constantly iterating on our technology, we want to actually move to a place where we not only can recommend you the right targeted interventions, but we can actually predict stress and predict burnout before it happens. And so we'd love to get to a place with our technology where we're actually alerting individuals and telling them what to do before they get to a point of crisis, and therefore preventing high stress and preventing burnout. So that's the future of our technology. And then on the client level as well, having that almost like a burnout predictor or a burnout thermometer for the clients, so they can see if their workforce is reaching dangerous levels of burnout, and then we recommend on the company level things that they should do, like manager training, leadership coaching, etc. The second piece that we want to do is to start publishing clinical research from our data set. So, you know, we have a really valuable data set, and we're building essentially the largest and richest longitudinal data set on stress, where we collect not just physiological markers of stress, but also contextual data of what's relieving people's stress and what's increasing their stress. So that data set will then allow us to produce really interesting research that's never been done before to show the impact of our interventions on individual stress levels. And then in future, we'd love to link that to a reduction in chronic disease as well. Ultimately, you know, when I think about our super high level vision, by doing that, we are ultimately serving our purpose of why we exist, which is linked to the name. It's to help people be less stressed and therefore be more aware and ultimately experience the beauty of walking on earth.
There's a lot of data. You have got a lot of data, and it's also very personal data. One of the big issues around kind of health tech is how you secure that data and make sure that, you know, it doesn't get into the wrong hands in a world where we seem to be under hack attack a lot, and how people keep control of that very personal data. So what are your kind of thoughts on those things?
Yeah, I think the security and privacy around data is so important, because individuals are providing their personal data to us, and their personal health data, which is really sensitive. And also it's in a workplace context. And so it's really important that no individual data goes back to the employer. And so we're very, very clear about that, where all data is anonymized and aggregated within our system. And any data that we present to the employer is never given at an individual level. It's always at an aggregated, anonymized level. And the employers don't want to see any individual data either. So that is really key. And I think building that trust with your customer is also fundamental, so that there is an authentic, genuine connection.
And finally, I was just thinking about your point that you made about, you know, walking on earth. And I was on a train yesterday, and I don't think I looked up once from my laptop because I was busy working. And actually, if I'm thinking what causes me the most stress, it is technology. So how do we sort of deal with that? The fact that actually it's tech that is making us stressed, and tech that is sort of taking us away from the natural world.
Yeah. I mean, this is a big dilemma. I mean, my view ultimately on it, it's something I think a lot about, is that, you know, I've been in tech, but I'm also a big believer in kind of spiritual practices and being in nature and being more conscious and aware. And the way that, you know, I consider it is that, well, tech is here to stay. It's not going away. And so it's how we use it. It's not that tech in and of itself is bad. It's that how we're using it is bad. And so if we can teach people to develop a better sense of awareness and a better sense of knowledge within, that's the most effective way of treating the issue. You know, we're never going to get rid of smartphones. We're never going to get rid of advances in technology. But what we can do is teach ourselves to be more disciplined and to be more aware of the impacts of technology on our health. And so by cultivating that greater sense of awareness, by being less stressed, by building greater resilience within, we can therefore, hopefully as an effect of that, help people therefore have a better relationship with technology and understand kind of good and bad elements of it.
Well, that's what we've got time for. I don't know about you, Reva, but I'm going to go for a little walk in the garden after this.
Yes,
and not take my smartphone with me. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a really interesting chat. And of course, thank you to everyone who's listening. We'll be back with another episode next week. But in the meantime, you can keep up to date with all the latest UK tech developments at www.uktech.news. Don't forget to follow UKTN on LinkedIn and X, where you can also get in touch with me at Jane Wakefield with your comments and suggestions about the show. Until next time, goodbye from me. HSBC Innovation Banking, our partner for this episode, provides commercial banking services, expertise, and insights to the technology, life science and healthcare, private equity, and venture capital industries. To find out why innovation needs different, go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb.